It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Atamari, Rachel, I'm doing really well, thank you. It's we got our budget through last week, so it's been slightly less pressured this week. Councillors are having a recess week, but I took yesterday off. That was my day off, so back into the grind again now.
Excellent. Well, we want to talk about that a little bit. We've obviously been talking about what the emergency budget sort of is going to look like and how it's been passed and everything. But now that it's come into effect, what are we going to see? First off, what are some of the changes we might actually notice happening around Auckland and also with our rates as well?
Yeah, well, look, I think the first thing that people will notice is that we're maintaining the rate of construction that we were doing pretty much pre-COVID. We had planned to do $2.7 billion worth of construction. You know, this is transport construction. It's about environmental protection construction. It's about housing infrastructure. That's come back a little bit, but only to about $2.59 billion. And that compares, you know, with the average over the last 5 years of $1.6 billion. So we're continuing the rate of construction, one, because Auckland badly needs the assets that we're building. Just looking out at the Ferry Basin redevelopment that's happening down there and thinking about the new interchange at Puanui and the new roadway down, and we were opening up the start of construction on a new walkway from Glen Innes to Tamaki, the stage two construction on that project. So these are going to create long-term assets, which are really good. And, you know, you use a recession to build long-term assets. That's how Tamaki Drive was actually built during the Great Depression. But it also, as well as creating the assets, also, obviously, it keeps the construction industry going, because if we were to really put the brakes on construction, they wind down, and it takes them years to wind up again to get the skilled people, et cetera.
So that's kind of maintaining.
You'll see a lot more construction, yeah.
So that's sort of staying where it was, which does sound like a positive thing. But are we going to see any reductions in anything around the city that people might start to notice?
There will be a reduction, and you know, the obvious thing there is, first of all, in staffing at council, we'll be losing over 1,000 staff. The 600 that have already gone from short-term, you know, temp work, contract work, but also another 500 full-time equivalent positions. And that, you know, what we've got to try and do in that is restructure the council so it's doing more with less. It's a tragedy for those that are losing their jobs, because, you know, they've been doing a conscientious job.
Could this have been avoided? Do you think this could have been avoided? Obviously, a pandemic wasn't expected, but could that number of job losses have been maybe mitigated?
No, when we looked at it, and we had to find 450, well, we started off having to find $525 million, which is the loss of income. That's come back a bit because we came down to level one much more quickly than we expected. But it's still $450 million out of our budget that's gone. And, we simply can't continue to expend in the way that we were, particularly on operational matters. You can justify it for capital works, but for operational matters, we have to become a more lean and streamlined organisation. And, you know, that will have some upside, that we will learn to do things better. It will have some downside, and that not all of the jobs that we were doing in providing services can be done in the same way. But what we're trying to do is find those areas where you can have a reduction without affecting with any degree of severity the frontline services that we are providing.
So with that sort of number of jobs being removed, and are we going to see much impact on, as you were just saying there, how those frontline services are affected? Will there be some change in that?
No, largely because we've maintained the 3.5% rate rise. If we'd gone below that, you'd be talking about, you know, cutting back on the maintenance of parks and toilets and, having to close some of the public toilets, at least in the interim, having to cut back some of, you know, library hours was another thing that we were, you know, having to contemplate. And in the end, you know, we looked at what Aucklanders valued, one of the things they valued was library attendance. You know, 250,000 Aucklanders a week visit their libraries, take books out from their library, and we wanted to avoid that. Mm-hmm. And we bit the bullet and said, okay, you know, whereas we would have liked to have reduced the rates to a lower level because, you know, about a third of Aucklanders will be facing a lower income because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
We in the end decided the best thing to do there was to help those that were most severely affected by COVID-19, who had lost their jobs, lost their businesses, by rates postponement. And we've set aside $50 million for that.
So if someone does need to take advantage of that, how do they go about doing that?
They'll be on their rates document, which they're probably receiving this week, precisely what they need to do. But they need to contact council, and council will postpone for a year, maybe longer if necessary.
So will it come back to be sort of a big lump sum that they have to pay off, or how does the paying it back work?
Well, there's all sorts of different ways in which we can do it, but they can pay it back over time once they're back on their feet. So it's not a remission. You don't avoid paying your rates, but you are able to pay it, you know, when you've got back into employment or you've got your business going again. And there's a small administrative charge on that and the cost of the interest rate, whatever the interest rate is to us. So it's not a handout, but it is a hand up and a helping hand through a really difficult time for those people. And it means that in the coming financial year, we estimate that our income will go down by a further $50 million in terms of people not being able to pay their rates on time. There won't be penalty rates attached to it.
Okay, that's good. That's good to hear. One positive thing that has come out of the emergency budget is that the cleaners contracted by Auckland Council will now be paid the living wage. Now, that's a good thing, but it does come from quite a bad thing, which was that those cleaners were being paid just $15.12 per hour due to COVID-19 pay cuts, which is below minimum wage. And this has been quite well talked about in the media, but I just wanted to touch base with this again and just say, how did we get here? How at what point did council realise that these contract cleaners were being paid less, and what was the action that was taken at that time?
Yeah, well, of course, the cleaners aren't employed directly by council. They're employed by independent contractors who...
But at what point did the council realise that this was happening?
We found out, I guess, within a week or a fortnight of that decision having been made by some, but not all, of the contractors. Some of the contractors kept their staff on the normal wage, and my argument was always, hey, listen, you guys are getting the subsidy, the wage subsidy from government, so you're not going to get bailed out by council, you know, and... The cleaners weren't off for the full 12 weeks that they got the wage subsidy for. So we figured that the contractors were in a position where they could have maintained the wages of their staff.
But even if there was a drop at all, this is below minimum wage. That's, you know, well and truly in the wrong there. What point does council sort of draw the line, I guess, for working with organisations like that?
They were able to do that because obviously the work had stopped. So people weren't coming to work, but were still being maintained at a level, notwithstanding the fact they weren't working. What this budget measure, which is far more significant, actually does, ensures that we fund those contractors to pay people at a living wage going forward. So that will be introduced, as I promised before the election, over the three-year term of council. And, you know, there's obviously a sum of money attaching to that. I think it's about $7 million a year. But our position has always been, if you're working and you're putting in a full work week, you deserve a wage that you can live on. And that's the promise that we're honouring, and that was passed in the emergency budget, notwithstanding our other economic difficulties because of COVID-19.
How does the council ensure that this situation doesn't arise again with contractors that you work with?
Well, you know, unfortunately, contractors right across the board during the COVID-19 period were paying their people at 80% of the wages. And some of us are getting 80% of our wages right now on an ongoing basis. Because you know,
but 80% of your wages is not the same as going 80% and then below minimum wage. That's one of the bigger issues here as well.
Well, the question you'd have to ask is right across the board, right across the country, right across all employment sectors, many of the people that weren't able to work because everything had closed down were being paid at 80%. And I guess in that sense, the cleaning contractors were doing the same as other private sector employers were doing.
Now, last thing I just wanted to touch on with you this morning, Mayor, was a little bit more about the water crisis, which is obviously still ongoing.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about desalination tanks, and the council said that that's not going to be a plan that you're going forward with. Can you just explain why that is?
Well, we looked at three different major long-term sources for water. One was the Waikato River, which is probably the cheapest, but not as cheap as the dam water. The second was recycling our wastewater, which to clean up the Waikato River to the standard that it's pure, I think the operating costs are probably something like $12 million for recycling our wastewater at $60 million operating costs a year, plus the cost of building the purification plant. For desalination, it was a whole lot more again. And the big minus for desalination was, one, we weren't sure that the desalination plants that would be barging in were fit for purpose. But secondly, they were going to consume about 50,000 litres of diesel fuel a day.
Right.
And that's obviously contrary to... That would have added 140% to Watercare's total operating carbon emissions. So... when we looked at it, and the cost of building a desalination plant is at roughly twice as much as recycling your waste water. So it was the most expensive in capital terms for the long term option, and by far the most expensive in terms of the operating cost.
So if desalination is not going to be something that's pursued, is the reuse of wastewater still one of the things that's on the table at the moment?
Yeah, for the short to medium term, obviously, we're taking more water from the Waikato, and we've put $145 million into building an additional water treatment plant at Tuakau, another $57 million in a new water treatment plant in Papakura for the Hayes Creek Dam. So that will help us out, although that construction probably won't be completed until about July next year. We are taking more water right now from the Waikato because we'd already put in some additional treatment capability. At a certain point, we're going to have to decide if we go much further from the Waikato, presuming the water was available to us, we'd have to build another water pipeline up from the Waikato. That's about $500 million, plus another few hundred million dollars in further extending water treatment there. So the big decision we'll be making is, do we purify the wastewater that we've got at Rosedale and Mangere, or do we simply look longer term to rely on the Waikato? But the desalination plant was the least attractive for environmental and for economic reasons of the three options.
Well, I'm sure we'll be definitely touching base with this once again in the future, because this water crisis isn't necessarily going away anytime soon.
The cheapest option, Rachel, would be if it would rain, but it hasn't rained.
Yes, and rain over the dams as well.
Yeah,
good.
It's not raining over the dams, and we're maintaining our lake level. We're keeping below our targeted level for demand, but we badly need some heavy rain. We're still under 60%. Normally would be, you know, up to 88% at this time of the year. So, yeah, we've got to hope for rain, but we've got to take measures, as we are doing now, at significant cost, to make our water treatment plants and our sources of water more resilient faced with the likelihood of greater levels of drought with COVID-19,
the other
climate
crisis.
Change.
Yeah, that one.
I was just glancing at something on my phone about COVID-19 that had just come through. Yeah,
oh, well,
so,
it's a very 2020 situation all around.
It's not been an easy year, but we're getting there, and it was great getting the budget through with the overwhelming support of councillors and every local board coming in and saying, of course, you've got to maintain your rates at 3.5% because otherwise we'll be slashing services that our communities really need.
Well, thank you very much for your time, as per usual, Mayor Phil Goff. We'll
Thanks,
talk
Rachel.
To you again next Tuesday.
Look forward to it. Cheers.
Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
It was.